Let freedom ring. You're listening to The Freedom Message with Stephen Vincent live on BVSradio.com. Shout that message loud and clear. The Ron Paul Revolution is here. The number to call into the show and participate is 877-270-8714. 877-270-8714. Give us a call. Be part of the show. Tell us what you're thinking about, what's on your mind, what you're doing in support of the Ron Paul Revolution, or what you think ought to be done. Or, if you don't like Ron Paul, and you think he ought not to be President of the United States, sure, I'd like to hear about that, too. That'd be a worthy discussion. You may also call these alternate numbers if you get a busy signal. 877-270-8714. You can also take this number down. If you get a busy signal, try 530-876-9916. 530-876-9916. And also, direct number 530-876-9916. 9026 876 9026. Today, I think that the theme for today was set by Ron Paul's message sent out late last night, and I will read that for you today. The theme is generally about fiat money, the debt bubble, and the financial stability of the nation, and perhaps we might even say the world. From the Ron Paul campaign, a message from Ron Paul, October 17th, 2007. The other day, my old sparring partner in so many congressional committee hearings, Alan Greenspan, was on Fox Business Channel. After Alan promoted his new book, the reporter asked if we really needed a central bank. Greenspan looked stunned and then said that it was a good question. He actually talked about fiat money versus a gold standard. Now, the ex-Fed chairman is not about to endorse our sound money policy, but you know our revolution is working when such a question is asked in the mainstream media and this powerful man gives such an answer. As an aside, I'd like to say that I noted yesterday on the show that Ron Paul's interview on the Fox Business Channel, in fact, the same attitude was struck. There was an openness to discussing the issue of the Fed, of fiat money, of an alternative currency, of all of these issues. So effectively, yes, we have placed this back on the national agenda, and we have opened the debate. And right now, our approach and our policy of sound money is definitely front and center, and in a and something that can be discussed and is within the parameters of debate and discussion in this country. So, continuing with Dr. Paul's message. You and I are reopening a whole host of questions that the establishment thought it had closed off forever on war, on taxes and spending, on inflation and gold, and on the rule of law and our Constitution. A few years ago, I asked a famous conservative columnist a question. What did he think about the prospects for a restored Robert Taft wing of the Republican Party? He thought I was joking. As you know, I was not. After all the aggressive wars, the assaults on our privacy and civil liberties, the oppressive taxation and the crazed spending and deficits, I believe that many Republican voters are ready to return to our roots. And the big boys feel it too. It's no coincidence that the Republican National Committee invited me to a fundraising dinner involving only top-tier candidates. Some of the opposition claims that I am not a real Republican, whereas I am the only one in the race. And our campaign is registering new Republican voters by the boatload. None of my opponents is doing anything approaching that. Of course, they poo-poo our success. He's just registering Democrats and independents and people who have never voted before. Well, yes, it's called growth. We are laying the groundwork for the primaries. All over America, our support is wide and deep and growing. The young people are joining like never before. After the Dearborn debate, I went to the University of Michigan for a rally. 2,000 students turned out, something that has happened to no other candidate this year. The crowd cheered all of our ideas, but especially our opposition to the Federal Reserve and our support for real money of gold and silver, as the Constitution mandates, instead of prosperity-wrecking fiat money. American politics hasn't seen anything like this in many decades. It is truly revolutionary. But time is getting short. We must do massive radio and TV advertising, open many small offices, three in South Carolina the other day, staff them, pay all the bills, and turn out our vote with massive organizational and phone bank efforts. As you know, the blackout is ending. Our campaign is starting to get mainstream media attention, thanks to growing donations and volunteers. Our contributions are the key to more attention and to our being able to do the actual work of victory. Good news, our recent green eyeshade analysis of all the candidates' net finances, which got so much press attention, shows our campaign as one of only three in the top tier. But we must keep moving up. And the Iowa caucuses are now on January 3rd. The New Hampshire primary may be in early December. As always, everything depends on you. Please make the most generous donation you can to ronpaul2008.com as soon as you can. I need your help so badly. The other day, an 8-year-old boy handed me a white envelope. It contained $4 he had saved from his allowance as a donation to our campaign. I can't tell you how seriously I take my responsibility to your hard work and spend frugally and effectively to be worthy of his support and yours. Please help me keep working even harder and more effectively for all we believe in. Without you, I'd have to pack it in. Donate now at ronpaul2008.com. We have more than an election to win. We have a country to save. Ron Paul. Well, I really like that message a lot, and it's very timely, and it certainly echoes a lot of the analysis that I've been offering you in the last few days about how the media has been turning in our favor, and opening up to the issues such as the Federal Reserve, fiat money, and the like. And I think it's something that we need to respond to this appeal from Dr. Paul. We can win this election, and we can take this country back. We can turn this country around. We have the opportunity right now before us, an opportunity that is not likely to be duplicated. If we don't avail ourselves of it, we have no one to blame but ourselves. So if we aren't contributing everything we can, both financially and in terms of our efforts, It's really all up to us, as Dr. Paul is indicating in this message. So I'd like to pick up on that theme, because today the United States dollar, the U.S. dollar index, plunged. It fell about 0.75%, which in currency terms is a large move. I would encourage you to do a search, Google U.S. dollar index chart, and you'll find a chart of the U.S. dollar index. If you look back far enough, you'll see that it today fell below the 78 mark, which is the lowest point that it had reached in many, many, many years, going back something like 12 years. So the fact that it plunged through this key, what is known in trading terms, support level, without much of a bounce, the last week or so, it made a feeble little bounce off of there, means that there is serious selling of U.S. dollar-denominated assets. And in fact, there's a news report which tells us this from the London Telegraph, which is certainly an important newspaper. Japan and China lead flight from the dollar. So I'll read some of this. Data from the U.S. Treasury showed outflows of $163 billion from all forms of U.S. investments. These numbers are absolutely stunning, said Mark Ostwald, an economist at Insinger de Beaufort. Asian investors dumped $52 billion worth of U.S. Treasury bonds alone, led by Japan, $23 billion, China, $14.2 billion, and Taiwan, $5 billion. It is the first time since 1998 that foreigners have, on balance, sold treasuries. Mr. Ostwald warned that U.S. bond yields could start to rise again unless the outflows reverse quickly. Woe betide U.S. treasuries if inflation does not remain benign, he said. The release comes a day after the IMF warned that the dollar was still overvalued and likely to face some depreciation in the medium term. The dollar's short-lived rally over the recent days stopped abruptly on the data, increasing pressure on U.S. Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson to shore up Washington's strong dollar rhetoric. I'm sorry, I have to laugh that they even claim that they have a strong dollar policy at the G7 summit this week. The greenback has already fallen below parity against the Canadian loonie for the first time since 1976 and has touched record lows against the global basket. That would be the U.S. dollar index. It closed at $2.03 against the pound. They don't care as long as the fall is not disorderly. They see it as a way of correcting the deficit, he said. Mr. Wu said a chunk of the August outflows may have come from foreigners borrowing in the U.S. during the liquidity crunch to meet needs in euros. We think it may be a one-off. Yeah, right. The U.S. requires $70 billion a month in capital inflows to cover its current account deficit, but the key sources of finance are drying up one by one. BNP Paribas said America has relied on hot money from abroad to cover 25 to 30% of U.S. short-term credit and commercial paper market over the last 2 years. This flow is now in danger after the seizure in parts of the market over the summer and after the Federal Reserve's half-point rate cut, which has shaved the U.S. yield advantage over other countries. So there's a lot more, but I'm going to go ahead and stop right there. This is a mainstream, important British newspaper reporting this. Now, this has been known forever that this was coming, and it's happening right now. Everything that Dr. Paul has been talking about is transpiring right now before our very eyes. Gold is at a 30-year high. And the dollar is at like a 15-year low. Okay? This unfolding of the fiat currency regime is going to call into question the entire system that we are living under, have been living under for the last 30 years. And Dr. Paul is the only politician out there who speaks to the issue at all and has answers. This puts us strategically in an extremely advantageous position. This is the issue. You know, this is the issue of the day. This and the constitutionality of our current government. The two go hand in hand. The current financial regime that we live under is basically a departure from constitutional monetary policy. So therein is the root of the departure in whole from constitutional government. It started with the establishment of the Federal Reserve Bank, which is unconstitutional, and the IRS, which is unconstitutional, in 1913. And therein lies the root of everything. Dr. Paul speaks to that. And he's speaking to it at a historical moment in which the regime established under the central bank, the Federal Reserve Bank, is coming unglued. Now, it's coming unglued, and there really isn't a whole heck of a lot that they can do to keep it together. The forces at work are simply too powerful. The bubble has been built up to such an extent that it can do nothing else but burst. So here we are, politically situated in this situation, in this moment in time. What's happening? Well, another interesting report that today, the very first baby boomer to file for Social Security did so. Apparently, it's a retired teacher in New Jersey, I believe. I'm going to pull up the article for you. Now, you may have heard this before, that the baby boomers, and there's some issue about the baby boomers, and you've heard this, and that it's going to be a big problem, and when the baby boomers retire, and it's going to... Well, it's happening now. This thing that you heard about, and you heard it in some news reports, and you're really quite sure what it means. Well, it's all happening right now. See if I can kind of read a little bit of this here for you. The baby boom crisis worsens. Of the 78 million baby boomers among us, 8,000 of them are turning 60 every day. And they're filing for Social Security, which means that they have claims on money that does not exist. That if these 77 to 78 million baby boomers, who are all right now in a tidal wave going to start putting claims on the U.S. government for money that it just does not have, coinciding at a time when the value of the currency is plunging. It's going to have a 30% haircut in the value of the dollar in the next months. Probably it will happen very quickly. Those two factors coming together at the same time means that we end up in a fiscal crisis in this country. We cannot finance the trade deficit with foreign countries. We cannot finance the government because they're not buying bonds from us anymore. We just heard that in this report from the British newspaper. Okay? They're not buying the bonds from us anymore. They're selling the bonds. They're not financing our deficit anymore. Okay? So these two factors together put us in an incredible financial bind happening now. It's not something that's going to happen in the future, sometime in the misty recesses of, you know, in the future, 20 years from now, or 10 years from now, or even 5 years from now. No, this is right now. So, entirely within this next election cycle, these issues are coming straight up, front and center. Who has the solution? Who even has the questions? You know, Dr. Ron Paul. Only one. puts us in an incredible strategic advantage. I'm spending time on this today because I want you to gain an understanding about the situation so that when it comes time for you to speak with your friends and your family, or when we go knocking door to door and this issue comes up, you can at least say something about it. It's not easy to understand. It's even more difficult to talk about. Now, this is some stuff I've been studying for years, and I have an understanding of it. To express it to you, you know, I know that I'm woefully inadequate in my ability to actually communicate to you the intricacies of these issues. But I'm hoping that I'm starting to paint a little bit of a picture for you. I do have a piece here that I think helps. Now, some time ago, the U.S. Comptroller General, this is the person who basically does all the, you know, the figures for the government. You know, he's the guy who kind of adds it all up and says, okay, this is what it adds up to. The Comptroller General of the United States of America. A political appointee, I believe, yeah. Not an elected official. And he had some things to say. Now, this is back in 2006, I believe. Yes, we've got a letter from him. I'll just read this for you. America's Red Ink, Sunday, December 24th, 2006. The largest employer in the world announced on December 15th that it lost about $450 billion in fiscal 2006. Its auditor found that its financial statements were unreliable and that its controls were inadequate for the 10th straight year. On top of that, the entity's total liabilities and unfunded commitments rose to about $50 trillion, up from about $20 trillion in just 6 years. If this announcement were related to a private company, the news would have been on the front page of major newspapers. Unfortunately, such was not the case, even though the entity is the U.S. government. To put the figures in perspective, $50 trillion is $440,000 per American household and is more than nine times as much as the median household income. The only way elected officials will be able to make the tough choices necessary to put our nation on a more prudent and sustainable long-term fiscal path is if opinion leaders state the facts and speak the truth to the American people. The Government Accountability Office, GAO, is working with the Concord Coalition, the Brookings Institution, the Heritage Foundation, and others to help educate the public about the facts in a professional, nonpartisan way. We hope the media and other opinion leaders do their part to save the future of our children and grandchildren. David M. Walker, Comptroller General of the United States, Government Accountability Office. So, there is basically the government's top accountant saying we're broke and we're on the road to ruin. Well, let me go ahead and play this 8-minute piece for you, which is going to break it down for you even further.
Attention. But short-term losses aren't that important to the man you're about to meet. David Walker thinks the biggest economic peril facing the nation is being ignored. And for this past year, he's been traveling the country like an Old Testament prophet, urging people to wake up before it's too late. Who is David Walker and why should we care? He's the nation's top accountant, the Comptroller General of the United States. He's totaled up the government's income, liabilities, and future obligations and concluded that our current standard of living is unsustainable unless some drastic action is taken. And he's not alone. It's been called the dirty little secret everyone in Washington knows. A set of financial truths so inconvenient that most elected officials don't even want to talk about them. Which is exactly why David Walker does.
I would argue that the most serious threat to the United States is not someone hiding in a cave in Afghanistan or Pakistan, but our own fiscal irresponsibility.
As Comptroller General of the United States, he runs the Government Accountability Office, the GAO, which audits the government's books and serves as the investigative arm of the U.S. Congress.
I'm going to show you some numbers. They're all big, and they're all bad.
So bad that Walker has given up on elected officials and taken his message directly to taxpayers and opinion makers.
Dave Walker, how are you? Good to see you.
Hoping.
Okay, sorry about that. Let's try that again.
When the stock market plunges like it did this past week, everyone pays attention. But short-term losses aren't that important to the man you're about to meet. David Walker thinks the biggest economic peril facing the nation is being ignored. And for this past year, he's been traveling the country like an Old Testament prophet, urging people to wake up before it's too late. Who is David Walker and why should we care? He's the nation's top accountant, the Comptroller General of the United States. He's totaled up the government's income, liabilities, and future obligations, and concluded that our current standard of living is unsustainable unless some drastic action is taken. And he's not alone. It's been called the dirty little secret everyone in Washington knows, a set of financial truths so inconvenient that most elected officials don't even want to talk about them, which is exactly why David Walker does.
I would argue that the most serious threat to the United States is not someone hiding in a cave in Afghanistan or Pakistan, but our own fiscal irresponsibility.
As Comptroller General of the United States, he runs the Government Accountability Office, the GAO, which audits the government's books and serves as the investigative arm of the U.S. Congress.
I'm going to show you some numbers. They're all big and they're all bad.
So bad that Walker has given up on elected officials and taken his message directly to taxpayers and opinion makers.
Dave Walker, how are you? Good to see you.
Hoping to shape the debate in the next presidential election.
You know, the American people, I tell you, we've been to 13 cities outside of Washington this fiscal wake-up tour. They are absolutely starved for two things, the truth and leadership.
He calls it a fiscal wake-up tour, and he is telling civic groups, university forums, and newspaper editorial boards that the U.S. has spent, promised, and borrowed itself into such a deep hole it will be unable to climb out if it doesn't act now. As Walker sees it, the survival of the republic is at stake.
What's going on right now is that we're spending more money than we make, we're charging it to a credit card, and expecting our grandchildren to pay for it. And that's absolutely outrageous.
You've heard this before from Ross Perot 15 years ago.
In 1950, when the dollar was worth a dollar,
you might have even thought the problem had been solved.
Tonight I come before you to announce that the federal deficit will be simply zero.
Well, those days are gone. We've gone from surpluses to huge deficits, and our long-range situation is much worse.
President Bush would argue that the economy is in pretty good shape. Unemployment is down. The deficit was actually less than expected.
The fact is that we don't face an immediate crisis. And so people say, what's the problem? The answer is we suffer from a fiscal cancer. It is growing within us. And if we do not treat it, it could have catastrophic consequences for our country.
The cancer, Walker says, are massive entitlement programs we can no longer afford, exacerbated by a demographic glitch that began more than 60 years ago. A dramatic spike in the fertility rate called the baby boom. Beginning next year and for 20 years thereafter, 78 million Americans will become pensioners and medical dependents of the U.S. taxpayer.
The first baby boomer will reach 62 and be eligible for early retirement or Social Security January 1, 2008. They'll be eligible for Medicare just 3 years later. And when those boomers start retiring en masse, then that will be a tsunami of spending that could swamp our ship of state if we don't get serious.
To illustrate their impact, he uses a PowerPoint presentation to show what would happen in 30 years if the U.S. maintains its current course and fulfills all the promises politicians have made to the public on things like Social Security and Medicare.
What happens in 2040?
Well,
if nothing changes.
If nothing changes, the federal government's not going to be able to do much more than pay interest on the mounting debt and some entitlement benefits. It won't have money left for anything else. National defense, Homeland Security, education, you name it.
Walker says you could eliminate all waste and fraud and the entire Pentagon budget, and the long-range financial projections barely change in what's shaping up as an actuarial nightmare.
There's not going to be enough wage earners to pay for the benefits of the baby boomers.
That's part of the problem. But the real problem, Steve, is health care cost. Our health care problem is much more significant than Social Security.
What do you mean by that?
By that I mean that the Medicare problem is five times greater than the Social Security problem.
The problem with Medicare, Walker says, is people keep living longer and medical costs keep rising at twice the rate of inflation. But instead of dealing with the problem, he says the president and the Congress made things much worse just 3 years ago when they expanded the Medicare program to include prescription drug coverage.
The prescription drug bill was probably the most fiscally irresponsible piece of legislation since the 1960s. The
Why?
Imbalance. Well, because we've promised way more that we can afford to keep. $8 trillion added to what was already a $15 to $20 trillion underfunding. We're not being realistic. We can't afford the promises we've already made, much less to be able to piling on top of them.
With one stroke of the pen, Walker says the federal government increased existing Medicare obligations nearly 40% over the next 75 years.
We'd have to have $8 trillion today invested at Treasury rates to deliver on that promise.
And how much do we have?
Zip.
Walker says we have promised almost unlimited health care to senior citizens who never see the bills, and the government is already borrowing money to pay them. He says the system is unsustainable.
It's the number one fiscal challenge for the federal government. It's the number one fiscal challenge for state governments. And it's the number one competitiveness challenge for American business. We're going to have to dramatically and fundamentally reform our health care system in installments over the next 20 years.
And if we don't?
And if we don't, it could bankrupt America.
You're probably expecting to hear from someone who disagrees with the Comptroller General's numbers, projections, and analysis. But hardly anyone does. He is accompanied on the wake-up tour by economists from the Conservative Heritage Foundation, the left-leaning Brookings Institution, and the nonpartisan Concord Coalition.
Let's go.
The only dissenters seem to be a small minority of economists who believe either that the U.S. can grow its way out of the problem or that Walker is overstating it.
Unfortunately, they don't get it. I don't know anybody who has done their homework, has researched history, and who's good at math, who would tell you that we can grow our way out of this problem.
Economic growth alone is unlikely to solve the nation's impending fiscal problems.
Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke validated much of Walker's take on the situation at congressional hearings this year, and so did ranking Republicans and Democrats on the Senate Budget Committee.
This is not just about numbers. We are mortgaging the future of our children and grandchildren at record rates, and that is not only an issue of fiscal irresponsibility, it's an issue of immorality.
So there you have it. The Comptroller General of the United States of America supports Dr. Ron Paul's position on the financial system of the country, on the Federal Reserve, on the situation that we're in terms of government being way too big, taking on way too many obligations that it simply cannot pay for, and that we are on the verge of bankruptcy. Now, this was a year or so ago, a couple of years almost ago, that he made these statements and took that tour, trying to bring this information to the public eye. Things have changed. What he forecast as something that will happen in the future, he said, you know, we don't face an immediate crisis, but it's a cancer that could metastasize. Well, the metastasization of that cancer is happening right now. We are living that historical moment. That first baby boomer has filed for Social Security, and there is a wave of claims coming behind her. That is starting right now. The U.S. dollar is crashing right now. Foreign nations are starting to refuse to finance our debt right now. All this is on the agenda. This is the historical moment that we are living. Now, all of this is going to happen one way or another. It's better that it happen right now rather than in the future. Why? Because this will work to our advantage politically and help us get the man in the White House that can deal with this and help us shift the whole debate, which we are doing in this country, so that we can get back to constitutional government and sound money and hopefully save this country from the absolute catastrophe that its leaders have taken it to. With some luck, you know, we'll be able to do it. With some luck, with some hard work, with some commitment from everyone that, out there that's listening right now, donating to Dr. Ron Paul's campaign and doing everything that you, that they can do to support the campaign. I believe we have a caller on the line. Mark Augustine from the Ron Paul Rock Fest is on the line, I believe. Are you there, Mark?
I am, Stephen. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for calling in. So you've got something going on relatively soon. Why don't you go ahead and tell everybody all about it?
Well, in about exactly 1 week from right now, here in Atlanta, Georgia, we are having the Ron Paul Rock Fest at Smith's Old Bar. We've got 20 bands lined up. We're going to go ahead and raise money and awareness for local Georgia Ron Paul meetup groups to fund what they're doing, buy supplies, maybe do some billboards, certainly introduce more people to the message of Dr. Paul, and just have a really great night with a lot of good local bands and some good cocktails. And boy, I tell you what, we're excited, and you know, I appreciate you having me on to blab a little bit about it, but it's just going to be a really, really amazing evening for all the right reasons, just like you've been talking about on the air.
Yeah, well, Mark, you know, I wish that we had more people like you organizing more events like this, and we do. There are a lot of people out there doing lots of great things, but gosh, we need more, you know. I don't think we can possibly see enough of efforts like the ones that you're doing. Can I make a suggestion? At your table inside the event, you can go to ronpaul2008.com, and you can download a PDF form, a form that they have to fill out to make a contribution to the campaign, and have those forms available so that people that come in can also directly contribute to the campaign. Make them fill out the form and write a check to the campaign and have that, and then just put it in an envelope and send it off to the campaign.
And you know what we may even do too is we're trying to iron out some technical issues. There is wireless in the way the venue works. The music room is actually upstairs, and hopefully they're getting that ironed out to have the wireless also upstairs, so hopefully we'll have some laptops there, and people will be able to actually just get right online if they want to go ahead and make a donation with their credit card right there.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we're sort of handling the funding for this and the money that we raise, because it does get a little bit complicated with the campaign finance rules and whatnot, so we're going to go ahead, and the majority of the funds that we collect at the door, we're going to just use as private citizens here, and again fund the Ron Paul meetup groups and maybe go buy a billboard. It just seems a little bit easier, and you mentioned that you know, other people need to be doing this, and I'm happy to report that, boy, I've had a conversation with somebody out in Dallas, down in Orlando, in Greenville, South Carolina. I got a band out of Memphis wants to try to do something. I was even contacted the other day by Rich Goldman, who organizes some of the events with the up in New Hampshire for the Free State Project, and they are talking to us after we get through with the Ron Paul Rock Fest about doing an event up in New Hampshire in June.
So great.
I think that you know, anything that I can do, you know, certainly this goes out to all the people listening to this right now. You know, feel free to reach out to me through my website, which is thinklibertarian.com, or if you want to give me a phone call, anything that I can do to help anybody you know, across the country that wants to try to sort of copy what we've done. I think we've really hit on a neat formula here, and the way we're sort of setting this up with as many bands as we have playing and how we're sort of organizing the evening. So anything I can do to help anybody out there, please get in touch with me. I'll do everything I can to provide whatever assistance I can.
Very good. Well, that's really inspiring to hear that your idea is spreading, and I'm certainly looking forward to hearing the results. And, you know, make sure you get an MP3 to me of the show, and I'll, you know, take parts of it and put it out on the show.
You know, we will definitely do that. We are trying. We're hoping to possibly get this actually webcast on Ron Paul Radio. Again, we have to sort of iron out some technical issues, but I think at a minimum, if we can't for some reason make that happen, we'll go ahead and record the entire show and then do exactly that, just try to, you know, make it available to folks like yourself to go ahead and put whatever snippets they want up.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, when any help I can be, just let me know. I'm more than willing to help out. And I'm sure everything's going to go great, and you're going to have a successful show. Now, what website do people go to for more information?
We have all. You can find all the information at thinklibertarian.com. And if you go there, there's a press release. The graphic for the poster is up. I've been definitely getting some requests in. What we're going to probably go ahead and do is we're going to have custom T-shirts made up for the event. We're also going to sell 2x3-foot prints of the poster art that's been created, which we've been getting a lot of compliments on. And then after the event itself, we will make those T-shirts and those prints available at the website for purchase, and as normal, be, you know, taking a part of those proceeds and getting them, you know, to the campaign in one form or another, whether that's a direct direct contribution to the campaign itself, or again funding, you know, obviously some of the a lot of the work that's going on behalf of Ron Paul is this decentralized revolution that we have going on.
Yes.
There are ways to use funds to go out and fund a lot of that stuff, and you know, certainly all the Georgia Ron Paul meetup groups are.
Yes, I agree with you on that, but I also think it's really crucial, and Ron Paul was indicating this in his statement to us that I read at the top of the show, that we really got to pump the campaign's numbers up, because the propaganda value, publicity value on that is huge. And whatever money we can get into the campaign, not only do we need to pump the numbers up, but they can do a lot with it. They need the money to do the kinds of advertising that will really put us over the top in certain key states. And go ahead.
I will definitely heed that advice and do everything we can to direct as much of the the funds that we raise in the direction of the campaign. I agree with you 100%.
Cool, great. Yeah, you know, I had a point where I thought that the grassroots base could do it all, you know, and that it was all going to be on us. But now it's really kind of like a tag team effort, you know. I mean, the official campaign, they need to do that advertising, you know, because for one thing, we just don't have enough time, you know, to reach everybody that needs to be reached via grassroots efforts. We just don't have enough time. You know, if we had unlimited time, we had a whole year to work with or something, we could probably do it. But they need to be able to do that mass media, you know, marketing of the freedom message to people. Because, you know, it's just the fastest, easiest way to reach people. And there's certain people that just aren't going to be reached by the grassroots efforts. And so we need to empower them to do that by our contributions. It's really important not to, you know, diminish what we have done on the base level, because it's absolutely phenomenal. I mean, you'd have to guess and say it's like $300 billion worth of publicity, you know, we have, put out there through our grassroots efforts. You know, that's just a wild guesstimate, but it's probably something like that, you know, if you assigned a dollar value to it. And, that's just something that we need to continue to do, but we've got to support the campaign and their efforts, absolutely. So, Mark, I want to thank you very much for calling in. And keep us posted. Make sure we get an MP3 of that. And good luck with the webcast. And if you ever know of a band or a musician that's done a Ron Paul song, can you ask them to send it to me? Because I love playing Ron Paul songs on my show.
I will definitely remember that. And Stephen, thanks for everything that you guys are doing over there to continue spreading the message about the campaign, the message about the revolution, and ultimately the message about the principles and ideals that we're all passionately working towards, trying to get more people in this country aware of and to believe in and see the value of, you know, what it can do for, you know, this country. I mean, we're talking about a revolution. I think at the same time, if this revolution is successful, the next thing is going to happen is a renaissance. I mean, this country would experience just this rebirth and moving back to, you know, the core principles that got us to where we have gone to. And certainly, we all sort of realize that a lot of these principles have gone by the wayside over the last, you know.
Maybe we can look forward to a new golden age rather than a dark age, you know.
So, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
All right. Thank you so much, my friend. Bye-bye now.
Have a great one.
You too.
All right, buddy.
Okay. That was Mark Augustine from the Ron Paul Rock Fest. So go to thinklibertarian.com, or was it .org, one or the other, and check that out. So the next theme I want to move on to, this came up yesterday in my discussion with David Brody of the Christian Broadcasting Network. And, you know, he was bringing up that we need to, the Ron Paul campaign needs to figure out how it's going to address the perception of Ron Paul being soft on terrorism. And I tried to point out to him that a lot of people really get what he's saying, that on the blowback theme, that, you know, the point of view, the very point of view that we need to aggressively attack so-called world terrorism is erroneous and damaging, and that Ron Paul's position that we are creating more terrorism, that we are creating a bigger threat to ourselves by going into Iraq and aggressively occupying the territory of other countries by our interventionism, that this is the source of our problem in the foreign policy arena. And more and more evidence of this comes out on a daily basis. I'd like to play for you a piece from NBC, I believe it is NBC, and in which they talk about, let me see if I can bring this up for you. They talk about blowback and the war on terror, and this is a 3.5-minute piece, and it's well worth a listen because essentially it backs up Dr. Ron Paul's position 100%. Let's have a listen.
6 years ago this month, America went to war. And whether in the mountains of Afghanistan or the streets of Baghdad, the aim, we have been told, is to make Americans safer from terror here at home. But are we? Tonight we begin with an NBC News exclusive. Our Richard Engel, who has covered the war in Iraq from the start, has spent the last several months asking whether that war has indeed made our country more secure. Tonight the answer, from those who spend their every waking hour trying to thwart terror plots, and from those who tell Richard in no uncertain terms why they are committed to killing Americans.
If they don't die in suicide bombings, they often end up here, a police detention center in Baghdad. Inmates memorize the Quran and finger prayer beads while they await sentencing in a cell with a single tiny window. The inmates, including university professors and journalists, seem resigned that they could face the gallows.
All of the men in this cell are accused of terrorism, and to a man, each one says that it's the American occupation of Iraq that has driven him to violence.
An aggressor occupied my country, destroyed it, and made millions refugees. It is an honor to fight this, said Hamid Ali, the owner of a construction company who admits to attacking American troops. The U.S. says this war is part of a global war on terrorism, said Sadi Farhan, an engineer who also attacked U.S. forces. But people here, he added, say the war has increased fanaticism and brought terrorism to Iraq. It's the same message Al-Qaeda fighters and supporters have told NBC News in Jordan, Syria, Lebanon, and Saudi Arabia. But in Washington a month ago, we found a completely different message. Fran Townsend is President Bush's chief advisor on counterterrorism.
The threat level would have continued regardless of whether or not we were in Iraq. And in some ways, I think the threat level would have been worse because we would have had them there.
Would have been worse had we not invaded Iraq?
Absolutely.
But there was somewhat less conviction at the National Counterterrorism Center, set up after September 11th, where the FBI, CIA, and 14 other intelligence agencies worked together, sharing information 24 hours a day.
This is the center of the U.S.'s counterterrorism fight. In this room, analysts sift through about 5,000 pieces of intelligence every day and then whittle that down to 20 to 30 specific threats.
But the director of the center, retired Admiral Scott Redd, was uncomfortable talking about Iraq.
But the war in Iraq created a giant recruiting tool for Al-Qaeda. It has made the pool of jihadists deeper. That's what everyone tells me, including the jihadists themselves.
In the short term, that is probably true. But the question is, you've got to look at this, I believe, in the long-term strategic view.
Are we safer today?
Tactically, probably not. Strategically, we'll wait and see.
But in the Baghdad jail, there's no need to wait and see. Prisons like this are filling up across the region with men inspired by the war here to fight and kill Americans. Richard Engel, NBC News, Baghdad.
So there you have it. NBC News report, which basically validates Dr. Ron Paul's position on the war on terror. We are manufacturing the very terrorism that we're supposedly fighting. through our interventionist, aggressive, imperialist agenda. This is what he's saying. It's blowback. Okay, so the worm is turning on the financial issues of the country, on the Federal Reserve, on sound money. Okay, we're seeing it happen. The worm is turning. Could the worm be turning on the terrorism issue, on the war on terror, on the war in Iraq? Could the worm be turning on the question of constitutional government? It's entirely possible. We, you, me, Dr. Paul, and the campaign are having this effect. We are having this effect on the body politic. We are changing the way people are looking at these issues. We are forcing a reframing of the approach politically across the board to all of these issues. And it's going to come down to the core central issue, constitutional government. That's the mother of all issues. Constitutional government, rule of law, and the restoration thereof. And we are in the process of making that happen. It's only a matter of time, but time is what we do not have. As Dr. Paul indicated in his statement that I read at the top of the show, the very first primary could be New Hampshire at the very beginning of December. So we are running out of time. So we need to just get in gear 1,000% flat out from now until the primaries. We don't have any time to waste. Every penny that you can scour together, get it into the Ron Paul campaign and help them meet their fundraising goals. The publicity value of that is, we've already seen with the $5.1 million announced in the third quarter. If we can duplicate that and meet our goals again, imagine. Okay, we've got to do that. We've got to do that, and we need to get out there and do the hardcore grassroots organizing to get the votes in the ballot box. That means knocking on doors. That means taking down names and addresses and numbers and getting back to people in an organized way to get them to the polls on election day. We can win this thing if we do those things, if we take that kind of action. So all of this is happening right now. We're living a unique, special, historical moment. What I'm doing with these shows every single day is creating an audio document of history as it unfolds for you, for posterity. These broadcasts are the archive of the Ron Paul Revolution and the new American Revolution as it transpires. In every day, I gather together for you the latest news. I synthesize it into a presentation which summarizes the moment that we are living. What's going on? What's really going down? I put it together for you. I present it to you in this format of a talk radio program. So listen in every day, and you're going to get the absolute latest and the incisive analysis that you need to be able to understand what is happening, what is really, really happening in the revolution, in society, in the world, and so that you can then take that understanding and take it out onto the street and use it effectively. So I hope you've enjoyed today's program as much as I've enjoyed bringing it to you. Please visit my website, www.ronpaulfreedommessage.com, and check out my YouTube channel, ronpaulfreedommessage.com. You can also join my meetup. It's ronpaul.meetup.com/496. ronpaul.meetup.com/496. Sign up there, and you'll get emails letting you know when I have new guests on or new blog postings and the like. So please join my meetup and also join my YouTube channel. Become a subscriber to my YouTube channel. And I'm going to play for you a new song that I found on YouTube. Oh, the audio quality isn't all that great because, you know, it's a YouTube recording. But the song is pretty cool. And let me see if I can find that here for you. It's called Ron Paul Is Our Hope, an original acoustic song. And I don't even have the guy's name here. He's BootMe21. BootMe21 on YouTube. Don't see a name. Just a dude with a goatee and a guitar. Let me go ahead and play that for you. Enjoy. I will see you. Talk to you tomorrow. Again, same time. Have a beautiful evening now.